Good afternoon, Chairman Corbett, members of the board. My name is Craig Hunt. I am the interim lead of our cleanup unit as part of this agency. Last August, I presented an update to the board on our UST cleanup program and discussing our implementation of the state board's low-threat underground storage tank cleanup policy. And so this is a further update on our UST program and how things are progressing. For this presentation, I'll give the program review, a little bit of a review of the low threat closure policy and the path to closure plans that were part of implementing the policy, and discuss about the future of the program. So the UST cleanup program, there are separate regulations and funding for leaking underground storage tank cleanups, and thus a separate program as part of the state board system to implement those. We have 10 staff members in cleanups, and approximately two-thirds of our overall cleanup program work is in UST cleanups. There is also additional oversight in our region through two local oversight programs, which are the Sonoma County Environmental Health Division and the Humboldt County Environmental Health Division, implement the UST cleanup program in certain areas of their counties. There is the UST Cleanup Fund, which is a state program. Currently, it's at 1.4 cents a gallon of fuel that's stored in underground storage tanks, meaning every time you fill up a gas tank, 1.4 cents of it is going towards the cleanup program. That is actually funding investigation and cleanup work at contaminated sites. The cleanup fund is administered through the state board, and their roles include both technical review of projects and the money management aspect of it. And those funds also pay for our regulatory oversight. I presented this graph last August, and I've updated it since then. I'll repeat a little bit of the information I had given then about how our program has changed or transitioned over the years. To give some explanation and background, from in 1988, regulations went into place, federal regulations, to improve underground storage tank systems to better contain the fuels, and people had to comply, gas stations and whatnot, by the end of 1998. And so this graph is showing over time, starting from 1987 going through today, this is the number of cases that were open active cases each year over our program. So during this time, so the 88 to 98 period, over this time, it's not, if you see here in the mid-90s, it looks like our caseload leveled off. What's actually happening is there's a tremendous number of new cases are being opened, and because many of these kind of sites had relatively easy to address problems, and so many cases were being closed. When these systems were upgraded and tanks were pulled, that was overseen by local agencies. If contamination was found, it was referred to us or the local oversight program for regulation of the cleanup. Since about 1999, the number of new cases coming in has dropped dramatically then. For over the past 10 years, we've been steadily closing cases while the number of new cases coming in has lowered to just maybe a few a year at this point. So like I said, the easier to deal with sites were dealt with years ago, essentially. We're only getting a small number of new sites in. And so the cases that are left either have contamination that is technically complex to investigate and remediate, or for some reason are procedurally difficult, like with recalcitrant or absent responsible parties. Over the history of our program, we've had about 1,300 cases under our direct regulatory oversight, and we've closed about 1,100 of those so far. A few years ago, the State Board, to address stakeholder concerns, developed a low-threat underground storage tank cleanup closure policy, and that policy became effective about a year and a half ago. And it outlined a set of standards under which to classify such a site as low threat, and if so, to close that case without further work. And part of the work that we've had with that was to review all of our open cases within the first year under the policy, and then in some fashion annually thereafter for if it meets meets the policy conditions for closure, and also to develop path to closure plans for each case not eligible for closure under the policy. The policy due dates on those, we met those in terms of filling those out. And those were completed through... Thank you. No.
Yeah, these toxic tanks, it's really funny.
getting various thumbs up here. So, okay. So those, complying with those mandates actually involved filling out screens in our, state, water board, geotracker database. It's an online tool that can be used both for case management on the regulator end and for disseminating information about cases on the public end, to make more information publicly available. So tools were put into place in there for us to complete those. So I talk some about our path to closure plan results. I'm going to step back for just a moment on this graph. One thing I want to point out here, this is where we are left off at the end of 2013 at around 220 open cases. The dashed line here is actually representing those that are eligible for closure for under the policy but are not have not reached the case closure point yet due to things like monitoring well destruction. And so those are in process. So we are left with approximately 150 open cases at this time that do not meet the policy closure requirements. Regarding the path to closure plan results, I don't want to get into too much detail about this, but because statewide, some people will show some figures from these, what is essentially data mining of these geotracker entries. But the thing is that the geotracker tool used to develop and record path to closure plans was, quite frankly, implemented without guidance or business rules until the last couple months. And by that time, before the due date, and by that time, they were almost had almost all been completed. And so they were used in different ways by different agencies and even differently between staff and our agency. But I did have our staff go back through those then and try and do some cleanup on the data so that it would be reported a little more accurately as it was used by state board program managers. So these sites that we developed, these path to closure plans, and in general, these path to closure plans are not a plan in the way you might think of having a document on this is going to happen, this is going to happen, this is going to happen. These are geotracker screens in which we are filling out, we identified this impediment to closure. Well, what's the next step in doing that? And then what's the next step in doing that? I'd say there's one way to categorize our remaining sites. There are sites with ongoing work, and I'd group those at around 80, and we can make some sort of estimate on times to complete work at these sites. But those are dependent on many factors, including, you know, like one where the initial investigation was just at a site, the field work was just completed 2 weeks ago at one of the sites I was out at. And so I can't tell you, I can't make a plan to detailed plan to closure. It's that, you know, okay, well, if it shows this, you know, it's going to have to do more work. If it's all clean, well, then it can close. But under these kind of estimates, we're thinking maybe perhaps 30 to reach closure by 2016. The reason I bring up 2016 is that the UST cleanup fund is currently set to expire at the end of 2015. Although there has been a lot of talk about renewing it one time to try and do some sort of wind down of the fund to give people a chance to wean themselves off of it, I guess, at this point or something like that, that hasn't happened yet, and that's dependent on the legislature taking that up. So at this point, it is an unknown whether the cleanup fund will go away, will be gone at 2016, or if it might last another few years past that. The second category that I would put these in is that sites that are held up, stuck sites. I think maybe we have about 70 of those, typically due to recalcitrance or lack of funding because not everybody is eligible for the fund or they have reached the maximum reimbursement they can get from the fund, which is $1.5 million. The sites that are left are the more difficult sites, and the ones where work has been ongoing, you know, can be very, very expensive to get these cleanups completed. But we cannot make any sort of time estimates on these because right now we don't have necessarily a path forward on that. There are limited options for moving these forward. Formal enforcement actions take considerable staff time and have had mixed outcomes in the past. The ERA count resolution, the emergency abandoned recalcitrant count resolution this morning, which was on the uncontested item. That's one route for us having work performed at sites. It's another way to access cleanup fund monies, but in which we, the Regional Water Board, direct the work, and it's through a state board contract that consultants are hired and do the work. But that is a very cumbersome process, again, to do. And so there's a limited amount of things that we can accomplish through the existing structure. There has been some discussion in the UST roundtable, statewide roundtable with the program managers, of perhaps the state board staff and program managers may try to address broadening both of those efforts with additional action at the state board level through Office of Enforcement and through perhaps setting up some other type of funding mechanism or some ease in the process of that. Also, of course, our caseload is decreasing. So as, you know, our staff is getting to actually spend time. It's not that there's always been almost half of our sites are stuck. It's that the stuck ones never got closed. And so we're getting to the point of where we can start directing more attention and some more staff time to try and get some of these moved forward. But there are some issues with getting those sites that have ongoing work, that are in the cleanup fund, that have funds technically available, There has been at the UST Cleanup Fund a new site budget process. And it has created additional obstacles to obtaining sufficient funding for work. So we have, I have a few sites where I have the consultants calling me up that, you know, 7 months, 8 months into the fiscal year, they haven't received a response yet to their budget change request for the site, and such a budget change request would only function for the rest of the fiscal year. And because of the oddities of the fiscal year starting going from July 1 through June, some remediation efforts are much more effective if they are actually done in the late summer or fall, and are, some of them are impractical to do any other time of year, which means that right now, even if the fund goes away in 2 years, I'm not sure realistically some of these remediations would actually get implemented that everybody agrees should be. So there are some sites at which these kind of impediments have been created. So as I mentioned, going into the future, you know, the fund has an expiration date. I already mentioned that there's, you know, discussion of a one-time renewal. Certainly there are some ideas being floated around about trying to do something else, but there are no plans in place right now. At the end of the program, which means whenever the fund is over, the remaining open sites will still be open. We still retain all our authority to require cleanup at these sites. There just won't be that funding mechanism for the work or necessarily for the regulatory program. They will move into our site cleanup program, which requires responsible parties to enter into cost recovery. We bill them for our time. We have the LOPs, our two LOP programs will certainly, by the time the fund expires, will be shut down then. There are certainly some people at the county agencies then who may be out of work at that point. And Leslie Choate, who heads the Sonoma County LOP program, was going to be here, but with a schedule change, the unanticipated schedule change, she's not here at the moment. So Humboldt County currently has about 68 sites remaining. Sonoma County currently has about 53 sites remaining in our region. Sonoma County, of course, is encompassed by two regional boards, and so they have additional sites which are in Region 2 territory. The Humboldt County LOP then has essentially gone under the number that the state board has established for being kept in operation, though it might be a year or two before they would shut down. But at whatever point they shut down, those cases come to us then, and we take those back up again. So when the fund goes away, of course, there's going to be reduced work at sites. We're essentially, you know, we in the office, there are some people in our unit who are around before the cleanup fund. I wasn't. I started in 2000. But, you know, this essentially goes back to the way it was, where it's difficult to get any work done because people don't have the resources to do that. Most of our responsible parties are not big companies, are not oil companies kind of thing. So it can be more difficult for that. I would say at the majority of the sites that would remain, these don't necessarily present necessarily a big water quality threat. If it just is going to keep sitting there longer and longer, but there are always potential exposures through if somebody's doing subsurface work, if somebody decides they need to pull some soil out of the ground, it's really nasty. And there's impacts to redevelopment and property values. However, there are a small number of sites that will remain a threat or impact to domestic wells and water supplies and, you know, remain water quality threats in addition to being just general exposure potential exposure hazards. That's where we're at the moment. Any questions?
Board member questions?
Yes, thank you. Thank you for that good overview. You may have said it, and I may have missed it, but why just Sonoma and Humboldt County? Why not region-wide?
It takes a certain amount of resources on a local agency's part to implement a contract for it. And it's a contract with the state board to do that kind of local oversight program. And so in Sonoma County, actually, we do the UST cleanup work inside some of the municipalities like Healdsburg and Santa Rosa. And outside of those areas, then it's implemented by the Sonoma County LOP. All of Humboldt County is covered by the LOP, so only a few sites end up coming to us due to a mix of reasons. The other counties, it's just a decision on their part whether, you know, historically if they wanted to take that kind of work up or not. And so we retained it for the rest of the region.
Thanks. And then still trying to learn the vernacular, the acronym UST.
Oh, I am so sorry.
I got another one for you, so we'll go down the list, but what does that mean?
It's the underground storage tank. I started using that right off the bat, didn't I?
Thank you. And LOP?
Local Oversight Program.
Okay, thank you.
Yes.
Mr. Chair.
Board Member North.
Craig, thank you. First, by way of disclosure, this is basically a lot of what I do for a living, and I've worked in the fund for about 20 years. I was on the Low Threat Closure Policy Task Force. Steve, I'm really glad you actually stayed through this, because I think this is a conversation that needs to happen between the regional and state board and the regulated community, because we essentially have 22 months potentially to the end of the fund. There is a lot of reasons why these sites haven't closed or haven't had work done, and I think the IRA count funding request that was before us today is a perfect example. Those are sites that I think this is the third time around that I've seen some of those sites, and using the IRA count to try and get to some of these sites I think is wishful thinking, frankly. I think that as it goes, the pathway to closure, One issue that I really have with that is that it did not seem to include the responsible party nor their consultant, who is part of the triad of making these sites go. Because I'll tell you, I've worked as a consultant for 20 years on this stuff, and these are very difficult sites. And what we're left with essentially is a pathway to closure that then didn't involve the responsible party or the consultant to know how is it going to go? What are you thinking about? And I know that you didn't get to that detail, but I think in some ways that detail is needed here. There is reasons why things are not or are happening out here. I think as well, and I'll address this to you, Steve, is that I would like to see some coordination of this funding, is that we are in essence dropping out sites on a low threat closure basis. And we are calling them low threat based on a policy that was adopted by state board, and they're gone. They drop off the fund, and they're the low-hanging fruit here. But I think we need to look at the other side of that coin, and in the last 23 months of the fund, is we need to prioritize the funding and work towards closing some of these high-priority sites. Because I know myself of sites in Sonoma County in particular and up the coast that represent a significant threat to water quality. And in the North Coast, we actually have a preponderance of domestic water wells and municipal wells. The Sonoma County Water Agency is a rarity in our region. With respect to Eureka and some of our bigger municipalities, that's not the case. Healdsburg as well. But for the most part, I look at some of our outlying towns, Grayton, Forestville, the coastal, a lot of our coastal, a lot of the little towns up north. There is no backup plan to water, and we have some significantly nasty sites out here. I would like to see a prioritization, a coordination out of the regional board level that includes the responsible party and the consultant pair that goes through the agency process, then goes through the cleanup fund and prioritizes some funding, because frankly, the cleanup fund pays a lot of money to put a remediation system in, sometimes a couple $100,000, but then we get choked because you get a budget of $30,000 a year to run a system that should have probably three times that. Or it's run at a time of year which is ineffectual, which is what you brought up, Craig, and I agree with that. So I'd like to see, and I'd like to request coordination. I'd put myself out there to do so. I was part of that closure policy. task force, and I would be willing to enter into some type of mechanism that needs to happen, frankly, now to how we get to some of these sites. I think as it goes, too, I would ask, and Craig, I've mentioned this to you, I call it the Dirty Dozen list, that there are sites out here that we know about, and I'll say we, I'd say the regulatory, the consultant community, your LOPs, that there are sites out here that that need to go. They need to get handled, and they're in the fund, but there's reasons why, and simply enforcement is not a mechanism, and a stick to go after somebody is not going to make them go. That's not the case, in my humble opinion and experience. I think we need to get creative on some of this stuff. I would say, too, as it goes, including the LOPs in that process is key, because the LOP obviously has a number of sites out here. LOPs typically do not have enforcement authority if you're going to use an enforcement model, and so that has to come back through us. So I know that enforcement in the typical ACL or cleanup and abatement order is a very cumbersome process. I had some discussions with Samantha Olson about this in the last couple of months about what tools do we have, because back in the day of Sue Warner, who ran your program back in the day, I'd say in the early 90s as I recall, you know, it was very typical that a monitoring reporting program got put in place almost right away on some of these sites, that it started to lay down a regulatory pathway of expectation, and it gave you a way to track things. It gave you a way to stay in touch and stay on top of these things. It was essentially a very kind of easy and convenient time schedule order about when things were expected and were needed to be done. If that falls off, then you've got a way to, you've got a mechanism then perhaps to use administrative or legal tools to nudge it and get it going in the right direction. That would be my request here, because I think we need to look at both sides of this coin. The low threat is fine, right? We're calling things low threat. That is the law of the land, and that's what we're doing. But we need to also look at the high threat sites. Frankly, they're around here, and we know where they are. And this doesn't even get to some other things that are non-UST sites here. And I will put myself out there and help in any way I can. As a consultant, I know that that gets me near a line of conflict, and I'll raise that from here. The thing is, I'm interested in how we are truly protective of water quality here, because we're talking about some things like benzene, some fairly nasty components out here, and there is a history of this happening. You know, Well 4 in Sebastopol is a perfect example. I recused myself from the discussion on the consent item this morning. There was a fellow that there was a request from our staff to get some money. That money was actually forthcoming, but the owner, because it was going through a lien process, didn't want to do that. So he came to my firm, who I work with, and my guys and myself worked on that site, and we frankly pulled the sites, and it's frankly going to close, which is great. That's fantastic. I'm proud of that. I'd like to see the expedition, though, of similar sites in our region, that we take care of these sites to the extent that we can, and that we formally coordinate ourselves through the cleanup fund, through the state board, through the regional board, through the LOP, the responsible party, and the consultant, because I think time is very, very short here. So I would like to suggest that we do that. I'd like to see a stepping beyond of a pathway to closure process. I'm not trying to create a work program for you, by the way, mister. I think you guys have done a really good job, and I really appreciate your work
Thank you.
Particular. I know you're acting as lead here, and I really appreciate your leadership. I really do. I'm looking for suggestions about how to carry out then the coordination with state board. We don't necessarily have to figure out that now. And when I say state board, I'm talking the UST program. I'm talking the state board itself. I'm talking the cleanup fund. And because, frankly, go back to the late 80s. That was a horrible mechanism to enforce upon with no money and funding. And that's what we're going to go back to.
Right.
And, frankly, that doesn't work so well. No. I don't think it did. That's exactly why the Barry Keene Act, which is the cleanup fund, was formulated in 1992.
Right.
So I got to operate off the premise that we got about 22 months, something like that, that the fund potentially sunsets. I've heard discussion that it's going to soft land, but I don't know if that's the case and be extended. That is a legislative act, which neither you or I nor Steve Moore has really any control over, and I realize that. So given that premise, I would like to see us expedite some prioritization to, I'll call it my Dirty Dozen, that we get to these prioritization of high priority sites.
Yes, and I do have a short list from the Sonoma County LOP, and we do have our short list for things that we oversee in terms of things where these are, we, you know, getting those moved forward would focusing efforts there would be good.
Any other board member comments or not?
Just a quick comment. Thank you for this. Your second to last slide, the one right before this, left me pretty freaked out. It just doesn't really paint a nice picture of where we're headed, but I'm comforted now after Mr. Noren's knowledge, enthusiasm, and passion for the subject and willingness to get involved in laying out a pathway. So I'm feeling much more at ease now.
Well, thanks, man.
But I'd like to, just like you had said, just to see where we're going and, chart a pathway. I'm happy for the awareness. This is a good lead time. We see where it's going, appreciate that for sure, know what we don't want to go back to, but where we want to end up, just being proactive. So thank you.
Right. You're welcome. And if I could... Because right now I'm just reporting on the UST program side of it, and I know, as David is very aware, the flip side of the program are the other things, all the other programs or all the other type of cleanup sites that we deal with, where there hasn't been a funding mechanism, and there's been some pie-in-the-sky discussion of, well, maybe we'll get a dry cleaner fund in this transition, though I don't hold out any hope for it whatsoever. But essentially what remains in terms of these is going to be similar to where we are at now with a lot of these other kind of sites that also are impacting water quality. So,
Mr. Masti.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For either Craig or you, David, watching that curve, is it fair to say that we may wind up with cleaning up the average, the medium, the small one, and because of running out of funding, time, et cetera, we wind up with the worst of the worst that never get taken care of? Is that a fair portrayal?
I would say right now, if I'm trying to get cleanup fund funding for something, it's a lot easier to get money for destroying the monitoring wells to close a site than it is to get money to implement a remediation project that everybody has agreed is needed. So it comes across. This is anecdotal for me. It comes across as an odd skewing of priorities because I hear from one program manager that we want to be shifting our attention to the high priority sites, but then the actual funding, which the UST cleanup program in Sacramento is completely separate from, at the state board, is completely separate from the UST cleanup fund in Sacramento. And it can be difficult sometimes.
I just wanted to, first of all, tell you how much progress we've made. When I first came on this board, Board of Realtors was just angry at the number of underground tanks, the inexperienced staff, and our inability to make decisions, come up with remediation plans, the title companies, Chamber of Commerce, our legislators, and county and city officials. I haven't heard any of those complaints for quite some time. That's a compliment that we are getting stuff off the table and moving forward. We may have to look. I realize these get harder and harder, and of course we want to take care of, if it's too serious, we're going to have to do something. But we also do have the horrible precedent of some of the old mines. The property, people walk from the property because they're not, there's no way to remediate. So I think we really need to try and see through where we're going to end up, what's the game plan. And then if it's clearly impacting a public resource, then that's got to be a priority to protect the public.
Mr. Chair, I agree with that. I think it. I think the particulars to this issue, though, we do have a fund. We do have a robust mechanism of regulatory here, and frankly, a lot of these sites have been taken care of. I mean, there's been, I believe, somewhere around 11,000 plus sites closed in the state of California. Mm-hmm. Before the low threat closure policy was promulgated and adopted by state board, our basin plan basically drove a very stringent cleanup requirement. Part of the requirements on the low threat policy, though, there's some basic tenets that have to be met. One is that the public water supply requirements out there, that you have a backup water plan in essence. And so from the standpoint of what we have, I'm not so sure, Board Member Massey, that we're left with the worst. We still have sites coming online. I would tell you in my experience, we're still pulling tanks. There's not the thousands of tanks out there, I don't think, anymore. There's less of them, so there's less coming online. I do agree with you, Craig, that there has been a prioritization and an effort to close the low-risk sites. Right. And it seems like we've kind of flushed that out, and that's going. My request, then, is to get to the high-risk sites in the last 2 years. That's really what we got.
And then I'm going to have to ask you to sum up, Member North.
I again, will request that we within the next, and I'll ask it this way, in 30 days, that we come up with a coordination mechanism to State Board, and I would enjoin within that myself with you, Mr. Moore, to try and make that happen, to see if we could find ways to streamline this. I think we should involve our LOPs, our LOP roundtable, and our UST roundtable as well. My request, too, is you further look at some of these sites from the basis of the other end of the coin, which is the high-risk sites.
Yes.
All right. Well, thank you. Unless there's any further comments, the hearing is closed.